The Rufus Project would like to advise the following podcast contains spoilers for Evita from 1996. If you do not wish to have this movie spoiled, please watch it before listening to the following podcast. Is it a great celebration of an influential person, or should we all just be crying for Argentina? We watched Evita from 1996 to see if we could redeem it. Were we successful? Find out after the theme!
Boy? Oh boy.
Is it good to be bad? So bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? Got bad. I love dodgy creatures, but we want to know what the redeeming features.
Boy?
Hello and welcome to the Rufus Project Redeeming Features cast, this time looking at Evita from 1996 as suggested by Christian. My name is Trevor Holland and I am joined by...
Christian. Sorry, Trevor, the way you said suggested by Christian. Oh, God. That always scares me in an intro to a movie. Thank you so much for having me back on the Redeeming Features and letting me, I suppose, get this one out of my system after... I suppose you kind of owed me one after Gods of Egypt being over 2 hours. I thought, I've got sort of one up and a movie that I kind of was keen to revisit again. So thank you.
Hey, look, I also made you sit through the extended edition of Batman v Superman. So I think when it comes to long movies, I'm the guilty one this year.
Actually, that means I've probably got another movie up my sleeve. Thanks, Trevor, for reminding me.
Oh, no. What have I done?
But I'm looking forward to chatting Evita. And it was good to actually, you know, as we always say, it's good to revisit these movies with the Redeeming Features hat on. I don't want to give anything away, but, I was a fan of this movie when it came out and, you know, had the DVD. And it was good to be able to revisit with the Redeeming Features hat on to sort of see, did it stand up 20, does it stand up 21 years later?
Yeah, absolutely. Certainly. I think, as we said previously, there's been guilty pleasures we've gone back to and realised that with the Redeeming Features hat on, it's like, what were we thinking?
Yeah, so, we're just more guilty than anything else.
yeah, absolutely. Guilty for giving them a bit more money. Anyway, we shall focus on Evita from 1996 this time. Now, if anyone out there hasn't seen it, I do have a little synopsis here. Of the movie. The hit musical based on the life of Evita Duarte, a B-picture Argentinian actress who eventually became the wife of Argentinian President Juan Perón, and the most beloved and hated woman in Argentina.
Interesting. And that probably is something that sort of is something you've got to realise is as much as, you know, this woman was put on a pedestal, she had a lot of detractors as well, and that's something that I suppose the film touches on. I suppose my familiarity with Evita has been probably through the movie itself, and I've sort of, you know, gone back, and I'd probably say it's one of my favourite musicals, and honestly, that's not that's not stepping ahead of myself. That's not saying what I think of the movie yet. But, you know, so it and being a big fan of Andrew Lloyd Webber and Tim Rice, you know, fresh off Jesus Christ Superstar and coming out with this, it's, you know, it's interesting how he adapted it off a book, I think, that came out in the 70s that was quite, you know, anti-Perón, let's just say that. So we are seeing it from not necessarily a neutral point of view.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But before we get, I suppose, too much into the trivia sides of things, we do have to talk about, I suppose, what this movie has done. And I've got the awards page open up here in front of me because it's quite a big list. Of course, probably because most known or most famously, it did win an Oscar for Best Music Original Song for... Andrew Lloyd Webber's and Tim Rice's You Must Love Me. That was, of course, written for the movie itself. It was nominated for the Oscars for Best Cinematography, Best Art Direction, Best Sound, and Best Film Editing. It won itself a number of Golden Globes, Best Motion Picture for a comedy or a musical, Best Performance by an Actress, Madonna, that's in a musical, Best Original Song again. It was nominated for Best Director for Alan Parker, and also for nominated for Best Performance by an Actor in a Musical before Antonio Banderas. It's got a BAFTA under its belt with plenty of nominations there. The American Cinema Editors USA, they nominated it for their Best Edited Feature Film. And the list goes on, but certainly, you know, it featured quite heavily in the Academy Awards and the Golden Globes for 1997. And yet again, not a Razzie in sight, which, you know, I think is generally a good feeling for a movie producer not to be featured in the Razzies.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say it's probably good for a Madonna movie to not be in the Razzies too, because she has had quite a very dubious film career. So this may have been the film that might have changed that, or it was a bit of a step in the right direction, let's just say. But you mentioned the Academy Award, because apparently when a musical hits the big screen, it has to feature a new song in order for it to be nominated for an Academy Award.
So yeah, definitely didn't do too badly in the award stakes, but what we should also do is look at our turkey trivia. So that's where we talk turkey about the movie with some of the figures, and then on to some trivia. So Evita, it's actually rated 6.3 out of 10 on IMDb, which, you know, is a little above average there. It had a budget of $55 million. It ended up taking $141 million worldwide from the box office. So it didn't do too badly.
Yeah, that isn't too bad. And I do remember, you know, I can't remember what grade I was in when it came out, but I do remember it was kind of, I suppose, not a sleeper hit, but it had a lot of buzz around it in the lead up to it. There was a lot of documentaries on TV about the making of some of the scenes and things like that. So, yeah, I actually thought it would have made a little bit more than that, actually.
Yeah, certainly, I know that, like, at the time, there was quite a controversy, you know, casting Madonna in the role of Evita certainly wasn't a popular choice in the lead up to the movie. And I think that, you know, prompted some of the more negative press. And I think there were a number of negative reviews just based on the fact that there were people out there that thought Madonna shouldn't even be anywhere near a production like Evita. But, you know, how that turned out, we can obviously talk about as we go along. Now, speaking of Madonna, she was cast to this movie after she wrote a very long letter to the director Alan Parker, convincing him that she was perfect to play for the role. She accompanied that with a video for the song Take a Bow, where she specifically asked the director that it should be resembling the 40s or 50s. She also compared her life to Eva Perón's, as they did lose lost one of their parents as a child, and the similarity between Madonna and Eva arriving in a city with no money or friends, and how they managed to succeed after all those difficulties.
Well, yeah, as a Madonna fan, I can kind of see it, but then at the same time, too, I don't know whether to take on board the making her way through possibly a few different men to get to the position. I'm sure she probably related to that as well. I'm not sure, but that is something that I'd heard as well, and I think that it had been a movie that had taken, you know, since the 80s to sort of reach the big screen, and yeah, as you mentioned, she was probably the last person on the list, really. The fact that she actually ended up being, Evita in the film is actually quite astounding, considering the resistance people had.
Yeah. Well, you say it was in production for a while. Just some of the other people that were considered for the role of Evita along the way include a few familiar names here too. The likes of Jennifer Lopez, Mariah Carey, Gloria Estefan, Zsa Gabor, Barbara Streisand, Patti LuPone, Darren Altley, Carla DeVito, Bette Midler, and Sarah Brightman have all been in consideration for the role during the very long process. And when Oliver Stone was the director before Alan Parker took over, Michelle Pfeiffer was also apparently up there with the possibility of getting that role.
Well, that's interesting. I'm trying to imagine so many people, but I think, you know, obviously we'll speak to a bit later on. There's just so much, I don't know, you do see a lot of similarities, I suppose, more sort of, I suppose, facially or, you know, visually with Madonna and Eva Perón. So, yeah, it's kind of, it's so hard to think about someone else playing it, actually.
Yeah, especially someone like Mariah Carey. I can't see that, especially, you know, because we have seen her performance in a movie before.
yes, exactly.
She didn't glitter in her performance.
I was going to say, this is no glitter, let's just say. And especially a movie that is based on, you know, it's not just a fictional tale or something like that too, being based on something that's, you know, Argentinian history or, as you said earlier on, an iconic figure, you know, it's, this is a pretty major musical. And as I think I mentioned earlier too, Tim Rice, yeah, based this musical pretty much on most of the lyrics on a, I think it was a book called, I might be getting the name wrong, The Woman and the Whip, which I suppose is probably not a very nice title anyway. So it was a very much an anti-Perón viewpoint that this whole musical was coming from. But, of course, you know, once that musical comes out and they want to make it into a movie, of course, they're going with that viewpoint the entire way. So, yeah, so I can see why this musical took a long time to come to the screen, especially with also knowing how to do it. You know, I've seen a few productions before where it is very much a simple stage with a lot of it done with, you know, rear projection and things like that. So, yeah, being able to flesh it out and make a big movie musical, you know, it was a big undertaking.
Okay, well, speaking of the other, because we mentioned before about the long list of people considered for Evita, the role of Che Guevara, played by Antonio Banderas, again, over the length of the of the time that they spent trying to put this into a movie. In for that role, previously considered actors were Elliot Gould, Barry Gibb, Meatloaf, David Essex, who I believe actually did play it on stage, John Travolta, one of our friends, Sylvester Stallone, and Patrick Swayze have all had their name in the ring from time to time.
Oh my gosh, I'm just trying to imagine Meatloaf playing the part. This is bizarre. But it's actually, it's interesting because you mentioned Che Guevara, but I was going to say Alan Rice. Tim Rice has come out, the lyricist has actually said that he actually didn't mean him to be based on Che Guevara. It's just kind of become like that sort of in a lot of subsequent productions or a lot of a similar, you know, sort of association. But he pretty much just picked a name of somebody that would have been contemporary at the time. And this guy is supposed to represent just an everyday person. But it's interesting how, yeah, over time, it's sort of people have assumed him to be like that. And I think when they made the movie, they made sure that they sort of displayed Antonio Banderas playing the part as more of a an everyday guy, but without the beret, which some productions had done.
Yeah, true. But then Antonio Medeiros, actually, like the story of how he got the role, apparently he submitted a self-made audition tape and performed all of the musical numbers in front of Alan Parker when they met up for dinner in Miami. So that would have been quite an interesting dinner meet with Antonio Banderas just getting up there and doing all the musical numbers from the show.
Considering he sings pretty much most of them, so that would have been quite a lot too. But I must admit, most way through the movie, it was hard for me not to half expect him to come out with Puss in Boots. But anyway, yeah, because I don't know much of Antonio Banderas' background, but I didn't realise he was a singer, I suppose, and he managed to do the role quite possibly without stepping too far ahead of myself. So, yeah, he must have been trained in that sort of stuff. I'm not sure.
Yeah, well, we're considering that, like with Antonio Banderas, he was largely an action star or even a drama star up until this point. I think one of his bigger roles before this was he was Armand in Interview with the Vampire. Was probably something which brought him to the forefront. But then, like Desperado, he was in like almost like some spaghetti western type stuff as well prior to this. So he never really had much in the way of a musical background prior to Evita. So I can imagine that he worked very hard to get himself in this movie and convince Alan Parker that he could do it.
And it probably would have been the case with both of our leads. You're probably people that sort of unexpected in the role too. So I think the other actor, Jonathan Pryce, who plays Colonel Peron, or President Peron. He, I know him from Brazil, the 80s movie. That's probably the only other thing.
Oh, yeah.
So, and Jimmy Nail, who plays Migaldi, the, you know, her first sort of love interest, I think. Didn't he have a hit in the early 90s with something? I know.
Ain't no doubt it's plain to see.
Yeah, that's it. Is that pretty much what he's famous for, I think?
Yeah, that's all I know him for.
It's funny because I know him from Evita, and then I've since heard that song since. So, but I suppose and that probably works well with a musical. I was going to say works well going in with these sort of unknown faces, but I suppose having Madonna there is probably doesn't really support that case. But but everybody else is relatively unknown, and I think I don't have the other movies in front of me, but I know Alan Parker did movies like Fame in 1980, and I he's always had that's right, The Wall, of course, Pink Floyd's The Wall.
Yep.
So he has got that movie musical sort of background, mm-hmm. and you can see a lot of that, I suppose, come through as we'll chat.
I do like the fact that Alan Parker himself makes a cameo as the frustrated director when we see the director sort of just with his head in his hands as Evita gets up to try to perform in this movie.
But you do wonder, oh my God, was that how Alan Parker was feeling directing Madonna in general? But I don't know. Maybe not. But yeah, he definitely knows. He knows his musicals, let's just say. So he's probably, you know, a good person for the job, especially with something, as I said, like someone like Fame, which isn't exactly a high glossy musical. It's quite dark and a lot, you know, very emotional and personal. So I suppose he does seem like the right person to have taken on board this I suppose, heavy musical or dark musical?
Yeah. You certainly can't fault him as a director, especially with a musical bent. But what we should do, I think we need to get a move on. So
yeah, definitely.
Now this is the redeeming features cast. So what we like to do is see what we're working from. And so what I've done is I've dug up a review as our baseline to see what the less generous opinions about this movie are. So the title of this review is Really Bad Musical. Awful music, awful directing. Madonna tries to resurrect this pile of beep with her acceptable acting, but she really isn't a good singer either. Overall, unless you're a big Madonna fan, don't waste your time. Plus, there's a whole pile of bonus reviews I could have used in there about people claiming that the movie put them to sleep, and they're all one star.
And a lots of beeps, let's just say. So I suppose with reviews with lots of beeps, I suppose you definitely have set a baseline for us.
Yes, indeed. Now, I mean, yeah, as we mentioned before, this one does clock in at just under 2.25 hours. And like I said, I will admit happily that at least it's not as long as Batman v Superman.
Oh, yes. But it's definitely, something like this, you think, oh, wow, but I suppose a movie that's going to, cover somebody's life or, you know, career is, 2 hours is probably quite ample.
Yeah. But, I mean, it sort of like starts very subdued. I did notice, like, with those opening credits, just white text on a black screen and just this faint voice in the background, which you find out is a movie being shown within a movie, which is always a very interesting way to start a movie.
And as you said, with those whole with the those credits just flashing up, you know, very plainly, you know, and it almost annoyed me, actually, those credits. It was almost like annoying my eyes. I'm like, just get into it. And as you said, when you're hearing this voice in the background, you're like, where is this going? What's happening? You know, and obviously, you know, as you said, we soon realize that they're actually watching a movie. And, you know, the big opening production number of the musical is, you know, a cinema in Buenos Aires, 1952, which obviously is what they're doing with this movie. And it pretty much establishes straight away that something that always makes me shudder is we're watching a flashback movie. We're opening with the end.
Yeah. I mean, that whole sequence certainly has a pretty big spoiler. If you're not familiar with the story, but mind you, if it's a biographical movie about someone who lived in the 40s, then at some point they're going to die, but, you know, to actually no have the casket. have it open with the announcement of her death in the cinema. And then we get our first view of Antonio being very thoughtful. Like, he looks very thoughtful as he's singing his song with his cut and bruised face. Before, you know, they flash back to Evita as a child and just the mixture of when they're having the argument, when they're trying to get into that funeral, and, like, it's fairly straightforward when they're in English, but as soon as they start speaking Spanish, it gets super-duper heated. And it's like, you know, do you want this to be an English performance or a Spanish performance? Or are you just going to cut back and forth for dramatic necessity? I did find that a bit odd to begin with.
And what I felt with, like, pretty much what you just said then, I felt that they... That's, you know, a clever thing with this musical is they've obviously gone, hey, we could show a lot of this stuff on stage. We may as well show visually, you know, her going to her father's funeral, and because they were lower class or middle class or whatever, they weren't able to, you know, get into the funeral. But I just felt that it went on way too long. And even though, like, essentially pretty much from when we see Antonio onwards is the, you know, the overture, you know, it just felt like, visually, they were showing us something that for 5 minutes that we know, yeah, okay, we get the idea. You weren't allowed to see your father in the funeral. And I think there's even a lyric later on where she goes, you know, we were kept out of sight, hidden from view at his funeral, but they have to visualize it as a 5-minute scene. And it just sort of that, I don't know, the opening was very plodding to me. But I thought, considering the fact that it was going into more of a, I suppose, MTV style, when the musical sort of kicks off a bit more, I suppose it makes sense for a completely sung through musical to have some kind of, I don't know, backstory at the start just to give us something to grab onto. But I just felt that it was very, I don't know, it was a bit unnecessary.
Yeah, well, what it did do though, because I mean, obviously that's quite a grim scene. But then, you know, when it cuts back to Antonio singing his way through, I suppose, the equivalent of opening narration, except he's singing it this time, you can't help notice right from the start that like, he's got a certain charm. He's got this twinkle in his eye and there's, like, the look on his face. And you just, like, from the outset, I could not help but like Antonio. I will probably be gushing over Antonio quite a bit, just to warn you now. But then, I don't know, Antonio Banderas, I've always found him to be a very entertaining actor, no matter what he does. He has a certain charisma, and that's something which I think shines through even very early in the movie during this quite serious sequence where we're seeing Eva both being dead as well as being this child. So it's good to have that to balance it out.
And the good thing about that is the fact that he is our narrator, and kind of in all the madness that happens, is kind of the guy that we kind of, I suppose, relate to the whole way through. I don't know if that's sort of, yeah, well, yeah, the narrator is our sort of guy. So I suppose to have us be won over by him so early on is probably good. Yeah, and he does have that charm about him. I think, and as I mentioned earlier, I think it's good having him more as an everyday guy rather than maybe having him portrayed as Che Guevara. It might have brought on a bit more of a, I don't know, a darker sort of feel, I think. So he pretty much was just a general narrator. And what I love, and, you know, of course it's the musical itself, but what I love about the musical and Tim Rice's lyrics is from the outset, Chi or whatever, the part that he plays is just so cynical, and it sort of gives you, he establishes the baseline from the outset that, you know, this, whilst it might be the story of Eva Perón, it's going to have some cynical moments. It's not going to necessarily show her as a saint the whole way through.
I agree totally. Like, so just some of the lyrics and like, even lyrics that seem serious, just the way he performs them just gives them that little twist, that little thing to sort of like say, you know, just almost like a knowing wink to the camera. So sort of like, you know, I know I'm singing one thing, but really it means something else. And, you know, I can't imagine too many people being able to pull that off all that well. You know, you see singers trying to act and they just can't quite show the full range. And then actors trying to sing, it's just, you know, doesn't always seem all that convincing. So if you've got someone who can balance that out, then it immediately just adds a whole new level.
And especially when he's such a big part of the role, you know, not just narrator, he's pretty much kind of, you know, giving us the story the whole way through. And I think one of the things I did read was one of the things that, you know, in the lead up to the movie about sort of how they were going to make this into a film was the fact that he narrates so much of it to the audience. How are we going to show this as a movie where he sings to the camera? And that's what I love from the outset. He sings to the camera like he's in on, not in on the joke, that's not the word I'm looking for, but he's the guy we relate to, you know. And I love what, yeah, as you said, he'll sell a few lyrics. And oh, Tim Rice as a lyricist is just absolutely amazing. Just a lot of the stuff, it is so cynical and so biting. And I love, like, little lines like, you know, like everyone talking about how wonderful Evita is. And then, yeah, Antonio will just look at the camera and go, but she did nothing for years, you know, with a little twinkle in the eye. Yeah, and as you said, you believe it, but you also are a bit, yeah, it kind of gives you a real, an unbiased point of view because you're seeing, yeah, you're seeing sort of the good of Evita and the bad, I suppose, too, for in his eyes. And I kind of ended up seeing Antonia more as maybe her self-conscious, but anyway, that's probably stepping a little bit, you know, ahead. But, yeah, he was a very important character and I'm glad we established that from the outset.
Yeah, and I'm glad he is quite personable and charming because he gets everywhere.
Oh, I know.
He's at the cinema, and then they cut to this bar, and there's a little tiny Argentinian town where Jimmy Nail is doing his sleazy lounge singer act, and here's Madonna, you know, coming along with him. And Antonio's there serving in the bar and being a waiter, and he's also one of the kitchen staff. And when they do get to Argentina, who's the bartender? Why, it's Antonio!
It's almost like every time Ava Perón needs to wipe her brow, he's there with the handkerchief, you know, as an example. And I think that's really clever, a really clever thing too. About, as I was saying, like they've managed to flesh this musical out rather than, as I said, I've seen, you know, versions where it's pretty much just them on a blank stage with rear projection. So Alan Parker's really made this musical and given it sort of a lot more depth and giving us a bit of a history lesson visually, not just, you know, yeah, it's definitely brought out a lot of extra stuff. And I think that's a lot with giving Antonio so much more to do than just a guy standing on a stage singing to the audience.
Oh, I've got to be so careful I don't turn this into a talk about Antonio. But I'm trying to think of something that's not Antonio now.
Stop
guessing, Trevor. I know. Oh, I'm going all fangirl over him. Oh, my purity. Anyway, I did notice just a few little things, you know, because I know people take license, but when Jimmy and Madonna get to Buenos Aires, Big Apple, yeah, they're walking through the crowded streets and there's like, you know, barely room to move, except for the bit where Madonna has a nice little celebratory twirl and swings her suitcases out wide. Suddenly she's got plenty of space to do that.
And that's one thing I noticed. And I don't know if, I don't want to ever criticize Madonna's performance with anything, but she seemed to love any opportunity where she could throw her arms up and do a bit of a spin. That's what I noticed a lot in those scenes. It was like she's, because she's, you know, she's never been the best actress, but it was like it was very limited with what she could do. And I think, and pretty much later on when you see her, you know, as the iconic Ava Perón, it was all very much hands in the air with fists. It was like, I don't know, it's like she studied a lot of footage of Ava Perón or even just sort of minimal scenes and just gone, okay, this is the sort of stuff that she used to do. But I know what you mean about the suitcase spin. It kind of got to be very noticeable after a while, up to the point of, oh, she's going to walk into that venue and spin around. Yep, she did.
Yeah, absolutely. And like you mentioned, like, you know, with Madonna's acting generally not being considered the greatest thing. That's why I think that as you mentioned before, that scene where she is being directed in a movie and the director's just there with his head in his hands and it's Alan Parker. You just wonder how much of real life Alan Parker brought to that cameo.
Well, Patti LuPone was interviewed last year. She originated the part on Broadway and said, "Oh, Madonna's a movie killer, can't act her way out of a paper bag. She looks dead behind the eyes." And I did notice a lot. I was looking, actually, having since heard that, I'm looking at her eyes, and I'm like, then I remembered that she actually wore contact lenses for the role. So any kind of blankness was probably cosmetic anyway. But I do see that she's not going through the motions, but I can also see that she's very much trying very, very hard. But again, with a movie that's completely sung, it is very hard to sort of give these characters a little bit more, I don't know, oomph, rather than just one song to the next, you know, rather than just being a sequence of songs strung together.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that's why, you know, I think, as I said before, you know, Madonna, it kind of shows that, yeah, okay, she can do the singing and even though she was, you know, quite a successful performer by the time that this film was made, I did read that she still had additional vocal lessons in order to, I suppose, give the songs justice. But, you know, when you look at her actual performance, she's doing what's necessary to support the song rather than acting in a way that builds on the song. You know, that's something that I find happens with her and Jimmy Nail, and even Jonathan Pryce, even though he's mainly an actor, so he's coming from the other direction. It's like they're very focused on what they're doing while they're singing. Those sections are really all about the music, but not much else happens.
I know what you mean. It doesn't really. You're not looking at it going, "Oh wow, that's an Oscar-winning performance from somebody there too." You know, yeah. It almost feels like they're going through the motions, I suppose. But I think, in something like this, I suppose it is really the musical or the music itself that's probably, you know, is the thing that's selling us. You know, but I did feel that, you know, it did feel they were going through the motions, but God, it did make you realise what a bloody amazing musical it is, actually, as a whole. And it was funny, I saw you hear a few little riffs from Cats and Jesus Christ Superstar. Andrew Lloyd Webber is quite popular for using a lot of riffs over and over again in musicals. So I did laugh at a few parts. I'm like, oh, that's the overture from Cats that he's used there. But yeah, you're mentioning about Madonna, but I know, yeah, she did have the extra vocal training, and I think they even lowered the key of the entire score, you know, to fit her voice a lot more. But, you know, even as a fan, you know, they even say, you know, she's not actually a very good singer. She's just very good at selling herself in, you know, performance-wise. So, she did, receive a lot of training. And recording since then, you can see that the work on Evita definitely, you know, paved the way for the future, I suppose, for her too.
Actually, I was wondering, is it saying that, you know, that paved the way for the future? Her Vogue stage, was that before or after Evita? Because one thing I did laugh at during the whole Rise to Fame montage, very well narrated by Antonio yet again, as she's going through all the different men to rise for her rise. And there's a section where she's being like a magazine model. And I'm sure at one point it's just like, oh, she gets to Vogue. That's very good. That's Madonna playing to some of her strengths.
Well, yeah, no, Vogue was, yeah, about 6 years before Evita. So, yeah, definitely. But, yeah, I'm sure. Yeah, that's the thing. Like, there were so many elements where you can see why Madonna sort of fought for it as being Ava Perón, being very similar to her lifestyle. Because, you know, she definitely clawed her way quite a bit to the top as well. So, but you mentioned that scene where, you know, the montage. And that's the great thing I love about this. Again, something they couldn't show on stage was the montages and, you know, like little shots of magazine clippings and headlines and things like that, just stuff they wouldn't be able to show on stage. I thought that really gave the musical a lot more depth than I suppose it could have if it was just sort of one song after another. So they managed to flesh it out a bit like that, which was good. But you mentioned, I've got here the casting couch scene. Essentially, pretty much her, yeah, the montage of her working her way through. But I love the part, what's the song, Good Night and Thank You, where it's, Antonio turning up as the waiter and, kind of escorting all the guys. flies out of the room, or, you know, like, Eva would have a one-night stand with a guy, and next thing, Antonia's outside the front door telling the guy to leave, you know, just sort of turns up everywhere. But, oh, I just love that scene where they're just, Antonio and Madonna are standing on the banister or whatever, looking down and just sort of singing, you know, and then looking at each other. It's kind of a interesting thing because, you, as I've said earlier, you sort of see, is Antonia sort of her subconscious rather than a narrator? Like, she's kind of the only one that's in on him. So I kind of like that sort of when she kind of gives him a little nodding wink, but no one else sees it.
Yeah, but then, you know, that did cross my mind too. If Antonia is kind of like playing like her conscience or some, you know, some other undercurrent of her character. But then, like, he does actually physically interact with the other characters as well. So it's like, oh no, he's there. He's there as the waiter and as the guy sweeping the stairs and as the guy putting a consoling arm around the latest suit to be replaced by someone more influential. I'm going to gush about Antonio again. I tell you what, though, I mean, he just turns up so much in so many different ways. If you did an Evita drinking game where one of the rules was take a swig every time Antonio turns up, you'd be plastered in the first half hour.
And that's what I love about it. Like, they've just been Alan Parker, or, you know, whoever's adapted it, you know, has taken so much liberties than just having a guy in dressed as a everyday guy sort of just singing this narration on the side. Like, it's so clever how they've sort of fleshed it out a little bit more too, you know. And we mentioned, yeah, the sort of working away through the different guys, but God, it doesn't. Yeah, I can see now why it doesn't necessarily show Eva Perón in the best light. Let's just say in her rise to fame, it's definitely coming from a very cynical point of view.
Yes, indeed, as very clearly pointed out by, well, there's a reason I started calling him Pop Up Antonio whilst watching the film.
Oh,
just pops up, does his bit, disappears for a bit, and there he is again, popping up.
I don't know. There were times when I'm like, oh, I thought Antonio would be, oh, they haven't used him there. They're going to give him a break. But one thing, and pretty much my knowledge of Eva Perón is probably through this musical, through this movie. So, you know, like, I'm still a bit vague about a lot of stuff. But one thing, you know, you're kind of shown very early on. I might be actually one step ahead of myself. Oh, no. Actually, no, this makes sense. On her rise to fame is how bitter a lot of other people were and probably how much the upper class really despised a poor person coming through up the ranks. And they really made a big thing of pushing that quite a lot. And I don't know if that's more so from the musical point of view, but I love how Alan Parker showed the upper class people, literally these stiff people that would look at the camera and sing and then go back to having their tea and scones.
But yeah, exactly what you're saying. Like the whole, I think it was Dangerous Games, like after Madonna is quite a forward little minx in order to get with Perón. I do like they get back to Perón's place, and when things start getting a bit more closer to sexy time, this smooth, sexy sax starts playing as it cuts outside. I almost expected to see Antonio with a saxophone in his hand at that point. As the relationships becomes more known, and you've got the upper class with their stiff upper lip, and then you've got the soldiers and the generals marching around singing this dangerous game. They refer to Madonna as a bitch and a slut in the song itself. Like, you know, that sort of display from, I suppose, the establishment, you know, it's a great way to set up the fact that, you know, okay, fine, she's very popular with the people, but, like, you know, the people that actually have influence, no one in that sphere likes her at all.
Because I think it was sort of meant that, yeah, because she, you know, came as this actress, or as you said earlier, B-grade actress that sort of makes her way up, and she doesn't have any right to be there. But in many ways, like from the way the movie is showing her, this girl was just incredibly smart. This woman was just incredibly smart as well. And there's a line that she's, I think, uses in the second half where you know, I was stuck in the right place at the perfect time or whatever. And it really was one of those situations, even though she was very calculating in the way that she sort of made her way up. You know, she really did just bump into Perron by chance. So, but I do love how when she does meet her, are you here on your own? Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And there's just a shot of the guy that she arrived with going, oh, I take it we're not on the date anymore.
Very, very much so.
Yeah, without saying, yeah, without saying too much, let's just say it shows Ava is, yeah, going from one guy to the next without really giving much much thought. And even earlier on when she goes back to Perron's house and she sort of lets go the mistress or whatever, one of the girls that he's been having an affair with, it's almost like, hang on, you were doing the same thing 20 minutes ago at the same age. But you've just got to remember too that you're, I suppose, given 50 years of life in a two-hour movie. So, yeah, everything moves very quickly.
Yeah, definitely. Well, considering, like, you know, like aside from, I suppose, the montage numbers, which are, there's a few, like, each song is very much focused on one particular point. So, you know, if it's a long, slow song, it's a long, slow scene not much happens. And and if it's a more lively song, usually involving Antonio, it certainly picks up the pace again. So, yeah, it really slowed down when Antonio wasn't there. I just wanted Antonio, I love you.
Yes, we know, Trevor, I know. I wish Andrew Lloyd Webber had written more of a role for him. I mean, I wish he'd written more for the character. But, yeah, but I do know what you mean. He, it's good because, like, having heard some of the production, you know, the cast recordings from the musical, they sort of rocked up a lot of the soundtrack too, and a lot of those were the sort of songs, like the narrator songs that you said, like Antonio would come in and sort of interject, but it was sort of wasn't being really advanced until he'd come through. It was like, oh, we're having a scene in the elevator where Perron's being arrested, but then you sort of need Antonio to come along and fill in the blanks. But the great thing is he'd come along and sort of take the shine off things in terms of being able to say, hey, it's all great, but people are stealing money on the side, you know, things like that. Mm. And that all comes down to the clever, I suppose, cynicism of the original musical.
Oh, but yeah, certainly once Perron gets arrested, it certainly changes the tone of the movie as we start having all these riots and the police swoop down and you get shots of Antonio rushing in and saving a child from the middle of this riot. I mean, I'd vote for him there. and which all leads up to the wedding between Eva and Perron. But at that point, I did have a bit of a giggle because you look at Perron's face in the wedding scene. It's like he's really unsure about it, and then cuts out to Antonio waiting outside as they come out to the crowd as a married couple, and then Antonio's there doing his little side bit, and he looks just as unsure as well. that you know, is this really a good idea, guys?
And that's the thing; it's almost like even though sort of she seems to be a bit of a spokeswoman for the people, I suppose, early on, it's more sort of, yeah, once the marriage happens that she sort of steps up and almost becomes the voice for him. And, you know, there's a song later on where they go, you know, she's the one who's put you where you are. You do see early on that she's sort of, she wears the pants in that relationship, let's just say. He did want to get on the wrong side of her.
Yeah, well, even Perron himself has a little song about, you know, should we quit while we're, you know, yeah, would it be so foolish if we quit while we're ahead and went off and lived on a beach somewhere?
Yeah. And he was happy. happy with that.
Yeah, she's having none of that crap. Nah. He's like, you know, we're almost there. We could do this.
And it's like the line that I love from the musical is when she's like, she says, we'll, and you'll be handed power. Like, it's one of those lines where there's a few little parts that come through where it's like, ah, it's about me. Oh, no, it's all about my husband. That's right. Mm-hmm. We're sort of given a bit of, again, you know, this is sort of showing it from, you know, you don't know what point of view we're sort of given, you know, but it's definitely not showing her as a saint the whole way through. Yeah, but as if we wanted to watch a musical with people just going how wonderful somebody is for 2 hours. So, you know, I can sort of appreciate that side of things, but yeah. Which reminded me, actually, something we didn't say earlier. Apparently, there was a lot of resistance about filming the movie in Argentina because of the way that the film was going to portray this this saint, I suppose. So, yeah, they were lucky that a lot of it, that whatever happened, did happen there. Especially with Madonna playing the role, too.
I somehow think a lot of that budget went through to appeasing the Argentinian authorities who were responsible for approving the filming.
I think so too, and I may be wrong, but I think the iconic balcony scene that she does, "Don't Cry for Me, Argentina." I think that was the balcony where the actual Eva Perón did it, or they weren't allowed to film there. I don't know off the top of my head, but if they were allowed to film there, it would have been quite a big effort to try and get permission.
Yeah. Actually, that whole scene where she comes out for that big number and the crowd's chanting, "Evita," and when she comes out, though, and she makes that move to I suppose, calm the crowd, it's almost like, okay, she's getting ready to lay down some beats the way she's bobbing her hands up and down.
It's like, oh no, it's the big hit of the musical, we've got to stop. But it is, like, even though it's such an iconic song, like, I've never been a big fan of the song. I don't like slow things like that. But it is one of those scenes where I'd love to say visually they did something really exciting with it, but what more can you do than have a woman standing there speaking to them, about these things and where I came from? But I actually really like the little bits in between the song where she comes out and, listen to that, the voice of Argentina. And one of the, what's the guy goes, politics is more than entertaining peasants. I loved all the little, again, the cynical, she had this big iconic number, but all the people back inside were like, nah, girl, you're not doing it. You're still not upper class enough for us. And that's what I love about it. Alan Parker did show the upper class as such snotty people. It was almost perfect. They were a class you almost didn't want to join anyway.
I could see why
she didn't give a, hoot.
Yeah, absolutely. They were. There was no sympathy given to the upper class in their fine dining halls, looking at the window with sneering looks on their faces, and stern singing. But one thing, I don't know if you remember the old TV show The Goodies.
Yes, from vaguely, quite some time ago.
There was one scene that I remember from that where Tim Brooke Taylor was playing a character of Tamita, and there were two girls who were really, really worried about Tamita being taken seriously. And if she was, I think she was trying to become Prime Minister of England or something. And she comes walking out and just goes, "Don't cry for me, Marge and Tina." And that's where, second the song started, that's where my mind went.
Oh, God. I'm sure this has been parodied. I'm sure this song has been ruined for so many people as well in different respects. God, like, I know. It's, yeah, and I think this was even, like, I don't know if it was in Australia. Yeah, I think it was a number one hit in Australia, I think, even in 1975, 76, when the first, suppose the concept album came out. So, yeah, I think I prefer your version, Trevor. And even on Madonna's second greatest hits album, they've included this as one of the songs, which always annoys me because it just feels so out of place. But, yeah, it was quite a big deal. So,
well, there's definitely much better songs sung by Madonna in the movie. You know, it's a big iconic number. That is, I suppose, the showstopper, or at least until we get to the original song written specifically to try to win that Oscar. But it comes through, and we get it complete with flashbacks to stuff early in the movie. You know how much I love it when they just re-show footage from earlier in the movie just to reinforce a point. That's something that is just like, I know that happened. Why are you showing me that again? You just want to reinforce this song and show how far she's come to sing this big number on this balcony in front of this huge crowd of crying people. Thank you very much for that.
Especially when they're showing it 45 minutes after we've seen the original bit of footage. It's like, we don't have that bad memories. But and the amount of times, I think it was about two or three times, where they show that footage of her riding in the train to Buenos Aires. Yeah, with the horses riding next to the train. They used it a couple of times. You're like, yes,
yep,
we understand. She went a long way. She's got better outfits than she did back then.
Yes. We... No, Alan, we know, okay?
And well, as somebody that gets very restless with long movies, I still look at this 2 hour 14 movie and go, hey, did you really need to do that flashback? That could have been that extra 14 minutes you cut off the stop. But actually, that was something we didn't mention earlier. I think this still has the Guinness Book of Records for the most costumes ever worn by one person in a movie, i.e. Madonna. So, hence, and you know, as we see with a lot of montages, a lot of different outfits being shown. But, yeah, I'm sure she would have probably worn each one for about 2 minutes before she put the next one on.
Well, there's a whole montage of just her trying on different outfits, yeah. So that certainly helps the telly go up.
Yeah, I did like it how that was edited together with her sort of spinning with one coat on, and then the next shot would be her sort of coming out of the spin with a different coat on. Like, and that was a lot of the stuff that Alan Parker was quite clever with. I'm tempted to say an MTV style, but it's not even that sort of fastly done, but each song is very much done like, you know, as you said, it's sort of got its own point, but it's almost its own music video. And I think, yeah, they were clever, especially in that scene too, where they were dressing her up and stuff, you know, being able to, you know, all these close-ups of lips and, you know, all the different outfits and things. So these were things that sort of elevated it for more than just being a stage to screen as is.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, certainly with I don't want to give too much away, but certainly with Alan Parker's direction, you know, this musical is given so much more I suppose flesh and so much more weight when compared to, say, a chorus line, which just gets a bunch of people standing on the stage for almost 2 hours. So it was good to see it actually taken bigger and beyond, and like the shots of like when they're just going through the streets and life is actually going on around them.
Like there's actually people in the background doing things and you know, the town is existing. Like,
you know, that takes it beyond just being this is a musical made into a movie, and you know, that's you know, makes it show that this is a movie musical. You know, it's quite a fine line, I think, at times.
And I think, we even mentioned earlier, Alan Parker's, you know, another film like The Wall, like it kind of, I can sort of see, not surprised we wouldn't sort of compare the two, but let's just say you can sort of see the way that he's sort of developed that a lot more. He's taken a lot of things out and added, you know, sort of fleshed them out a bit. And what little things that I appreciated, like he'd use bits of the score but have it playing in the background on a radio, or like a real crackly 40s radio, you know, just in the background, you know. So you're constantly, the score was constantly going, but he was sort of giving the movie a bit more depth.
Speaking of depth, really just getting back to the movie and the people in it themselves, Perron really didn't seem to do very much. He just kind of turned up when he needed to turn up, usually to sing a song to or about Madonna. It's just like, you're the president here, dude. You're meant to be the one calling the shots. But I think the most action we see him do is that dumb move where he takes off his jacket to show his working class. Oh, he's like, yeah, dude.
Oh, I just got sick of every time he had to do a speech, it would be "People of Argentina," you know, every time. I got so sick of that. She is getting on a plane now. And look, normally, like, I must admit, the way this is done, it's not one of those, I'm, you know, being as completely sung, it's not one of those musicals where it's like, I'm walking over here now, but I must admit, every time he sang it usually did feel like that to me. It felt quite awkward. But I suppose probably the angle I'd say with that, Trevor, is they just didn't want to show too much of him because essentially it's her story, I suppose. But yeah, it was probably shown more even to reinforce the fact that she probably wore the pants even more, and he was sort of in the background while she was, you know, sort of working for, I don't know, their cause and her cause.
Yeah. But you know, I think, like, his highlight, I guess, is when they have the whole Rainbow Tour song. He's there trying to sing her praises as as the ministers, and of course Antonio as the guy
as the projectionist, the
projector, gradually like erode away her credibility, and like what starts as this wonderful, wonderful, you know, joyous celebration of Eva Peron touring the world gradually fades away into this, you know, very awkward situation where she's getting mocked and ridiculed, and they're thinking, you know, it's been an incredible success. Yes?
No. Kind of.
Yes.
Yeah. And then I think, yeah, as the song ends, it's just them going, yeah, yeah. No, yeah, trying to convince themselves, but I just love how, you know, it's just a clever lyrics. I love the part where it's like, oh, she's not going to make it to England anyhow. It wasn't on the schedule, and he had to say, really, it was just really, and I love that little bit, which it works on stage, but it felt so out of place in the movie. But I can't believe they called me a whore. And then the guy's like, I gave up. I still get called an admiral, but I gave up the post years ago. It's an easy mistake. And just that sort of that real biting sort of stuff where you're like, yeah, well, you know what they're trying to say about you. You do realize. But yeah, so that's clever that they kind of maintain that stance the whole way through. As I said, it wasn't just everything's wonderful. Like you said, it would. Let's hear it for the Rainbow Tour, even if it ended up a disaster at the end. You know, it was all. Yeah. And then we started to feel it. It's very hard in musicals, especially movie musicals, where they're sort of completely sung. And I've seen other ones where sort of somebody's going to die or something like that. It's very hard to show it, but it was just sort of next minute she's getting tired and collapsing at the theatre. It just sort of happened very suddenly. Like, they didn't really know how to sort of segue into that.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so towards the end of the Rambo tour, when she collapses and she comes back home and is pretty much looking very pale or whatever, and they kind of use that to tie in with, I suppose, just the whole situation getting a bit on the messy side, shall we say? Leading up to that whole thing where you've got Antonio and her basically having a dancing tour of Argentina for their big song together.
Are you talking about the song where she's sort of in her subconscious, that waltz song that they're doing I'm thinking of? Yeah, yeah. That's one of those songs even more so where I was like, it's like they've made it out that he is sort of, yeah, her conscience or something like that. It's funny how they had it sort of, he appeared as she was going under, I suppose, in this operation. But yeah, it's a really interesting scene, especially when I thought it was actually cool how they were sort of doing it in a ballroom. But the next thing I'm like, oh, all these pig carcasses in the background.
Yeah,
like, as
exactly,
you said,
yeah.
It was like, I'm like, hang on, I thought you were in a ballroom before. But yeah, but as you said, yeah, it is more sort of like a tour of, yeah, I suppose it broke it down a bit, but I think it could have been clever and just done in a ballroom, so it was more sort of in her imagination. But yeah, the carcasses added a little bit.
a bit
of culture.
You can't go wrong with pig carcasses in a serious musical number.
But I did like that, because that was probably the first time you'd probably saw them sort of interacting or, you know, I suppose dancing together, where it wasn't sort of him being addressed as sort of, you know, just as innocent bystander. So, yeah, it's sort of, I don't know, it worked a lot, but I'm just trying to remember how they do it in the stage show. But I think it is very much the same thing. She sort of just starts dancing with him and sort of, yeah, they do the song. But, yeah, it's probably a much needed song at that point, because as we said, it got very dark in the second half, and it was all very much because we knew inevitably how it was ending due to the start. It felt like that just took a while to get to that. Did you feel that too?
Yeah. I mean, once that collapse happens and everything starts getting very, very serious, the movie gets very slow. So you kind of need something to break that up. But then even you know, my mate Antonio, like, he seems to lose that sly wink. But I did quite enjoy the bit at the end of that particular song when Madonna sort of, like, collapses to one side and he just backs slowly away into the shadows. It's like, okay, I'm out of here.
Well, that's what I liked about how the fact he just literally disappeared. It was like he was the whole time sort of her conscience or her cynical point of view, but now that she's got to this stage where she's possibly dying or sort of doesn't need him anymore, he just sort of disappears. Yeah, it was kind of, I don't know, I'm probably looking into it too much deeply than it was intended, but yeah, it kind of worked. But after that, it seemed to be a lot of kids chanting and people moan, you know, upset with candles, you know, a lot that we'd seen sort of for about 10 minutes in the opening section. So it sort of felt weird sort of them repeating it again, but obviously they sort of had to highlight her passing again. But I don't know, I just felt, yeah, exactly, that part was very slow. And
yeah, but yeah, like I said, you know, just going back to the bit where it's like, you know, it's like Antonio fades away because he's not needed anymore because she's about to die. But, you know, then he's back again.
Yeah, I suppose,
she has a final big reprieve and he's right there in the crowd. And even once she's gone, he's there in the queue to come and see her casket, and which he plants a big kiss right on top of. But you know, he just gets so serious and forlorn along with everybody else once Madonna dies. And you've got this bit where Perron is kind of just like glaring at him. I was trying to work out what was happening there. Like, he was fully acknowledging that this guy was stepping up to the casket that he didn't like the look of, and then the movie just ends.
Yeah, it's like Perron saw him as a reflection of the everyday person, and yeah, I do know what you mean. It is quite strange. It's like, oh, we better, they're the two male leads, we better have them have some kind of interaction. But yeah, it is quite strange. And then, as is quite typical with Andrew Lloyd Webber adaptations, it just goes just straight to a the very basic looking credits and a very slow song playing underneath it. But yeah, I did found that ending quite strange. And after I read that, I think Madame Tussauds made a Madonna / Evita wax figure to actually be in the casket. Every time I saw that, all I could see was that.
Oh, okay, fair enough.
Talk about a way to get you out of the moment.
Yeah, well, there was a few of those. Let's face it.
But yeah, so we were, you know, very, very cyclical or cyclical. We were pretty much at where we started at the end there. So, but sort of making you sort of feel a bit, I don't know, there's something always hard about a flashback type movie because you're kind of, oh, we've seen this before. We know how it ends, but we're, yeah, you're sort of left wondering, okay, the everyday people, the lower classes, what are they going to do now?
Yeah.
Considering how devastated you see how these people get. Well, could you imagine us being like that with our political leaders? That would never happen.
Yeah, nah. Yeah. No way.
So she definitely was impactful, yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah, absolutely. Well, that's gotten us to the end of the movie, Christian. Was there any other things that occurred in the movie that you wanted to discuss before we move on?
No, I think that's pretty much most of them, actually. Because, yeah, it's a hard movie to talk about because, as I said, it's pretty much one song and one sort of music video after another. So it's, so I think I've covered everything in that respect. So,
well, there we go. Well, I think it's time that we move on, I suppose, to the crux of the matter. And whether or not we find this movie redeemable. Now, you did choose this one, Christian, so I shall go first. I mean, the first thing I really noticed about this movie is that it starts so bleak. But then it just gets so lively for like two-thirds of the movie. And then it's back to bleak for the Madonna is dying bits. Which really means that it loses its pace. It loses momentum right towards the end there. Even Antonio, who I think people may realise is by far my favourite thing about this movie.
Really?
I don't know if it came across. Like, he loses the charming character that made his appearances so entertaining once we get to the end of the movie. Really, for this movie, I think the value you get from this movie really relies on your feelings towards the songs themselves, because, you know, that's, I guess, what sells the movie. If you like dramatic musicals, I've got no doubt that this will be something that you'll like. Personally, I don't mind dramatic musicals, so that, with the added bonus of pop-up Antonio Banderas, means that this movie does fall safely on the side of redeemable.
Wow. And it sounds like Antonio was, yeah, definitely a big say in that, a big decider in that for you, Trevor.
He was. If it wasn't for Antonio, this would be so borderline.
Oh, I'm actually glad to hear that, actually, because this is, as I said, you know, a movie that I remember liking and you know, being quite a fan of when it came out in 1996, but hadn't seen for a few years. So it's good to know you think like that, Trevor. So it was good to be able to see it with this... with the redeeming features hat on. Now, I can easily see why this movie took so long, almost 20 years, to hit the big screen, because it's such a hit-and-miss thing. It's almost like this shouldn't have been a movie, but it's also like, in the way that it was done properly. You know, we say, as you said, Trevor, it opens so bleakly and ends so bleakly. Well, yeah, exactly. And the good thing about it is at least the movie sort of... It keeps that pace. It doesn't try to glitter the entire thing. There we go, a Mariah Carey reference. But it doesn't try and, you know, try and make it out to be a story that it's not. And, you know, we know from the outset that what's going to happen at the end. And it, as you said, it's the music in between that should be something that keeps us going. But look, I adore this musical. You know, aside from the movie itself, I think this is probably one of the greatest musicals ever written. I think it's so inspiring. And, you know, I think it's got wonderful music. So, you know, as somebody that can then appreciate the music in that respect, you can sort of overlook a few of the performances that are a bit, bit ordinary. Let's just say Madonna tries so hard and succeeds so well. Look, you can't watch the movie and go, oh, she was terrible in it, you know, and she tried very hard, and you can tell that. So... I still always worry that Evita probably wasn't relevant in 1996 when it came out. It probably still isn't relevant, especially to Australian audiences. I know the Australian tour with Tina Arena is coming to the Opera House and touring around here next year, so I do wonder how it's going to go. But the good thing is we do have a movie musical version to be able to refer to, and whilst it's very 90s in feel, I think this is probably the ultimate Evita, you know, movie musical adaptation. So I think if made today, it would be edited too badly and sort of not paced as well as this one is. So I better shut up and say, yes, definitely, I can redeem this movie. And I think I'm glad we have a movie musical of Evita, a redeemable version.
There we go. That's very, very good. We have another redeemable movie under our belt. Now... we did put the call out for comments as well. So I have an extra opinion here. Susie, who regular listeners will be familiar with, she did say that she really liked... I'll just quote her directly from her comment. "I really like this movie and I love the soundtrack. It has Pop-Up Antonio." Yes, she agrees with me on that one. So it may not be completely historically accurate, but the costumes, music, and story is definitely redeemable. The rise of a woman from humble beginnings and her spectacular life and death is the stuff of legend.
Well, there go. That's three redeemables, technically. So
yes.
Can't do any worse than that. Actually, we can do worse than that, sorry. We can't do any better than that, I meant to say.
Very, very true. Well, you say that, but, you know, as with everything, I do like to finish with, I suppose, the major fans of the movie. So what I've done is I've gone to Amazon and I've gone through their 5-star reviews and I have found the following one. This is one, it's titled, "Outstanding. Madonna deserves a standing ovation for her portrayal of Evita. 5 thumbs up. Okay, that was the subject line, okay? "Of course, this is a classic on all accounts. Historically relevant, cinematically outstanding, and theatrically terrific. Madonna deserved more acclaim for her portrayal of Evita. Andrew Lloyd Webber music is timeless. 5 stars.
Well, there we go. Pretty straightforward, and yeah. It's good to know that the fans are out there. I went to look at the IMDb reviews, but I was actually worried. But good to know that, because there's probably some scathing ones out there. So it's good to know there's some some good ones there.
Yeah. Well, there we go. So I think across the board, it looks like Evita from 1996 is redeemable, which means I've got no pressure at all for the next one. Do it, Christian.
No. Let's just say, Trevor, I might have to give you a break from musicals for a while. I've been making you watch a few too many of them after the last two, but I'm glad they've been redeemable.
Well, interesting you say that, because in a very strange way, I'm kind of enjoying the musical bent that's largely been part of the movies that we've been checking out. And there is one critical flop that I think did okay at the box office, but I've never seen it. But it's something that I've always been strangely curious about, so I'm going to indulge that curiosity. This movie features a group at the height of their popularity. What is promised is a zany, madcap adventure full of girl power. So I want to see if this 1997 musical adventure delivers. So, Christian, it's time to check out Spice World.
Oh, Trevor. And how appropriate. It's been 20 years since the movie came out. And it's funny, I did a Spice Girl event about a year ago and had to watch the movie. So I have, believe it or not, watched it kind of recently. But I remember actually thinking at the time that this would be a good redeeming features movie. So, oh gosh, Trevor, I'm up for it. And it's got Meatloaf and Richard O'Brien Richard E. Grant and many other great cameos. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to... No complaints from me there, because I think it actually is under an hour and a half too.
There we go. Yeah, I think it's pretty. It's not a what you have to dedicate yourself to, which is good. Now, if anybody out there wants to check out Spice World, it's still getting around it myself. Actually, now that I think about it, if you want to watch that before our next podcast in Australia, it is available on iTunes, Google Play, and the PlayStation and Microsoft stores. Outside of Australia, I'm sure you've got quite a few more options. But certainly an easy one to get a hold of and check out if you want to have your say. We will, of course, be putting out the call on Facebook for comments over the next couple of weeks. So keep an eye out for that. And we would love to hear your thoughts on the redeemability or otherwise of Spice World for our next podcast.
And those in Australia, that's actually, Spice World is playing in most event cinemas around, I think at the moment, to celebrate the 20th anniversary as sing-along screening. So Trevor, this is probably a very good timing.
I was oblivious of that, so I'm kind of impressed with myself now.
There we go. You do realise I'm going to be promoting this podcast now to event cinemas, depending on how whether we redeem the film or not. That might be up to that. So, but yeah, no, I'm looking forward to it, because honestly, Trevor, I don't think I'd ever think that you'd pick a Spice Girls movie as your redeeming features. So for that, I'm going to try it.
There we go. I do like to mix it up from time to time.
Mixing it up.
and of course, as I mentioned before, we would love to hear from anyone out there. Do you have comments on Spice World? Do you think we were completely wrong about Evita? Let us know. It is very, very easy to get in touch with us. You can head to our homepage, rufusproject.com, and leave a comment below this very episode. You can send us an email to podcast@rufusproject.com. You can also find the Rufus Project on Twitter or Facebook super duper easily. So please get in touch. Let us know your thoughts. Let us know if you've got a movie that you think we should try to redeem. If you do want to do that, please have a look at our website first. We do have a list of all the movies we've covered so far. Just to make sure that we don't have any double ups.
And there's been quite a lot of them too. Not double ups, movies.
Yeah, movies, not double ups. And speaking of movies that aren't double ups, or maybe perhaps double features, I understand you've got a few very cool events coming up soon. Christian, what can you tell us about those?
Oh, well, as we go into the last part of the year, we've got heaps of stuff coming up in terms of my Halloween program, which is running from Friday the 13th of October right through to the 31st. So I've got a whole heap of retro and sort of contemporary cult classics on the big screen for that. We've also got the 50s and 60s party at New Farm Bowls Club on the 7th of October, and Rocky Horror Picture Show, which we have mentioned about, features yours truly, both of us, I mean, actually, Trevor, when I started recording this podcast, we had 3 tickets left. So I'm probably, we probably will say that is sold out now. So we will be back in March. So there are many other screenings coming up. So make sure you check out christianfletcher.com or Christian Fletcher Events on Facebook, because way too many to list here.
Absolutely. Definitely keep an eye on that. There's plenty of fun things coming up. Speaking of fun things, myself and my wife Susie also have another podcast on the Rufus Project Network, the What the History podcast, where every fortnight we release a little short podcast. It's only about 20 minutes long, so nice and easy to listen to, and each podcast contains a couple of bizarre bits of history to make you say, "What the history?" It's all in the name. You can find that on wthpod.rufusproject.com. Or if you search for the What the History podcast or hashtag WDHpod, you should be able to find it pretty easily as well. We're creeping up to a year for that podcast, so we're very excited, and we're happy that it keeps on growing. So join in. It's good fun.
Definitely recommend it. Wow, the time flies, doesn't it? So
from
historical tidbits to bad cinema, or in the case of tonight, good cinema.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think on that note, we shall probably a good time to wrap things up. Thankfully, this has been a redeemable movie. But as always, redeemable or not, I love these chats, Christian. They're so good.
I know. And even though we almost make 2 hours 14. I always prefer these than watching the movies themselves. So thanks, Trevor.
Fantastic. And so we will catch you all next time. Farewell.
When the world is in trouble, when our future is in danger, we call upon one man. But when he's busy, he calls 5 girls. Columbia Pictures presents The Spice Girls.
All right, we're coming.
In their film debut, Victoria, Emma, Mel B, Jerry, and Mel C. They're ready for action. Girl power. They're dressed to kill.
Do I let it shaken or stirred?
And thoroughly prepared for any encounter. It's a story of love.
I think with boys, you should be able to just wheel them in.
Yeah, and order them like a pizza.
Yeah, no cheese.
Compassion.
It's really too hot in here.
I need a fan.
Oh, that's better.
And misunderstanding.
When the speeding melon hits the wall.
Yeah. It's Christmas for the crows.
What did he say?
I haven't a clue.
That's more like it.
This January.
Would you like an hors d'oeuvre?
No. But I'll have one of these pie things.
Make your choice.
Oh, I like the blonde one.
No. Sporty.
Rock your world. And spice up your life with the Spice Girls. Spice World.
Yeah, but can they act?
Blah, blah, blah. Girl power, feminism, do you know what I mean?
Boy, oh boy.
Is it too good to be bad? So bad it's good. What's this movie? Do you think we should? Got bad. I love dodgy creatures, but we want to know what a redeeming feature.
Boy, oh boy.
Christian and Trevor on the case, watching movies from all over the place. I'm the B, says it's bad, but we want to know, is it fun to be had?
Boy, oh boy.
Redeeming features.
Boy, oh boy.
night and thank you, Señor Jabón. We are grateful you found her, I spot on the sound radio. We'll think of you every time she's on the air. We'd love you to stay, but you'd be in the way. So do up your trousers and go.